Burrell, is it?
Yes, Your Honor.
Time whenever you're ready.
24-2316.
Oh, is it 2316? I'm sorry, I have the wrong number down. 2316. My bad on my bench book. All right, Mr. Burrell, whenever you're ready.
All right, good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Tyler Burrell with the law firm McCumber, McCumber & Luber. We represent the appellant. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal, please. Great, thank you. The plaintiff here has standing because, as alleged, Rutgers schemed to hire graduating MBA students who did not have employment back into their program in order to inflate its rankings. As a result, plaintiff suffered an ascertainable loss because he paid tuition, had a contract, and did not receive the benefit that he bargained for.
Was he enrolled in the full or part-time MBA program?
He was not enrolled in the full or part-time MBA program. He was enrolled in the Masters of Science Supply Chain, and he also earned MBA cert.
In connection with this one, all he got, that was an MBA certificate for an online program?
Yeah, Rutgers has what's called a mini-MBA program that they've trademarked and reserved, and they market. It's a certification instead of a full MBA program.
Okay, so your complaints allegations are fairly sketchy. You say you didn't get the benefit of the bargain, but you don't pin down what the theory is on which you didn't get the benefit of the bargain. That's what I'd like to know about. So what is the subject of the bargain your client didn't get? Are we focusing on, you know, are you going to plead something about the ranking or future value or quality of education? Which is your focus?
Yeah, so the idea here in the damage is that the plaintiff did not get the benefit that he bargained for, right, in the top flight graduate business program, right? Rutgers marketed the
program. Flight meaning that the ranking is inflated or the value, the actual value of the education is inflated?
Well, I think there's two parts to that, Your Honor, if I may. One, that the ranking is inflated because of the fraudulent scheme we alleged, right? And as a result of that, right, the rankings would have been different. And
rankings would have been different. So that's the focus of your benefit of the bargain.
Yes, the rankings would have been different.
It's not that his classes are any different than they would have been otherwise.
No, the classes aren't different. The program's not different.
You're a lecture. You're not claiming anything about those being different.
No.
Okay.
No.
And you're not claiming anything about the future value of the diploma independent of the rankings. This is all through the rankings.
Yeah, the idea is that he did not get the benefit that he bargained for. And the theory here is exactly what's happening in the Columbia case and exactly in Favell, which is in our reply brief in one of the footnotes. But Favell.
So which ranking are we talking about? Is it really U.S. News rankings that is what you're focusing on and pleading?
That's what's in our pleading. That's what was alleged was the scheme to hire back the students. They submitted employment stats that said, and then hopefully.
Have they fallen?
The rankings have not. Well, we haven't pled that the rankings have fallen, but a cursory review online and further discovery will flesh out they have fallen.
But not pled it, but you could plead it.
We could plead it.
All right. And it's the U.S. News rankings that were falsified because of the employment numbers. You're not saying that Bloomberg or Fortune or anything else wound up being inflated as a result.
Well, we do believe further discovery will flesh out that Financial Times was also inflated because they use employment statistics as well.
You think you could plead Financial Times and U.S. News. So did your client find, if you had to plead it, what would your client say about any kind of reliance on U.S. News or Financial Times? Did your client see those ahead of enrolling, both of those?
Yeah, we've had conversations with our client that he viewed the website. So I think it's important that he went on the Rutgers website, right? And Rutgers markets these statistics and their rankings to all the prospective students. There's a whole website page that has every year all of their rankings, and that's marketed to all of the students, right? So
did your client say anything specific about, I saw the Financial Times ranking?
Well, yeah, we've alleged that he relied on those rankings because he believed the school was ranked high, and that's the reason why he wanted to go to that school. He wanted the value.
Something that included the Financial Times ranking as well as the U.S. News ranking?
Yeah, I believe we allege that, Your Honor, but I also want to warn
you. You could.
Yeah, of course we could, but reliance is not required under the CFA.
Understood.
Okay.
How does the ranking of the full-time MBA program affect your client, who wasn't even in a part-time MBA degree program. He was in a certificate program.
Yeah.
How would you connect those things up?
All right, this is a great question, Your Honor, and there's a simple answer for that. One, the rankings, we have alleged in our complaint, paragraph 207, that the rankings impacted all three graduate programs. MBA's program ranking influences the value of the MBA full-time, the part-time, and the Master's of Science. The idea is that this is a business graduate school, right? The pinnacle of a business graduate school is the MBA program. That's why you have a business program, right? So that inflates the value of the whole school. There's a mini MBA cert that our client also got, right? And those two are tied. They have to, if the MBA itself is not great, why would anyone go purchase the mini MBA?
It's almost like law schools. It's like if you get an LLM from a top-rated law school, you sit there and say, well, gee, no, that's not a JD. No, you still get the benefit. You're basically saying, you know, we aren't going to fixate on precisely the program because it's the overall reputation of school. And didn't Financial Times kind of rank the school generally, not the program, or did I have that wrong? Is it one of them that ranked the school generally, not program by program?
Yeah, if you go on our complaint, we have a screen part of the website. The rankings are extremely complex in that they dice them a bunch of different ways. One ranking says it's the top public school in the tri-state area. Then one ranking the top public school in the East Coast. You can slice and dice it any way you want, but the idea is the original sin was the fraud that we have alleged. Right, that ultimately inflated, the fraud inflated their employment statistics, and a result of that inflated their rankings. Students go to a top flight graduate school program because of the rankings, right? They're induced to go to that program, and they didn't get what he bargained for. He got a degree. Nobody disputes that. He got a degree, but it wasn't what he bargained for.
Doing what?
He got a degree, Master's of Science in Supply Chain, and he also has a mini MBA cert.
Still help me. How do you tie the inflated value of full-time MBA, inflated ranking of a full-time MBA, to his decision to enroll in the certificate program? What do you plead and what could you plead about that?
Well, we do plead that the rankings, we do say the MBA program ranking influences the value of the MBA full-time, part-time, cert program, and the master's of science degrees. But the key here is, I want to go back. I mentioned earlier about Favel, right? Favel is in California versus USC. It's a similar case about fraudulent statistics that were submitted to US News, right? And ultimately in that case, all of these questions that are being brought up are fleshed out in discovery. There's an expert that takes a look at what would the rankings have been if the accurate data was submitted, the adjusted ranking. And then an expert determines that.
They would have been lower.
Yes, yes.
If given a chance to amend, could you plead that they have in fact dropped?
Yes, we believe a cursory review shows they have dropped.
Let's do a timeline here. When was he? He first said that this goes back to what, 2018, or when did he? When was he a member? That's when he filed the first suit. Right?
2018 was when the fraud took place, and that was the year we alleged the first fraud.
You said the U.S. News and World Report rankings since then have not fallen. So did they fall in 2019?
We haven't pled exactly in the complaint.
The question was, did they fall in 2019?
They did not fall in 2019.
Did they fall in 2020?
No, I don't.
2021?
No, I did not have that number.
2022?
No.
When did they fall then?
Well, I mean, based off the information we have on publicly available sources, we have to get into the private facts of this, but in 2024 and 2025, U.S. News, it dropped approximately 8 points, and when the year before it was 45, it was ranked, now it's 53. Financial Times, it didn't rank it 1 year, but in 2024, it dropped from 69 to 86, right? But the idea is not that. I think it's incorrect to look, did the rankings drop? Because at that point, at the pleading stage, we're making a merits determination, right? Ultimately, we need to get into discovery and flesh that out. And that's what's happening in Favel. It's no different than Favel.
But you still enough to get the door.
Yes, Your Honor.
You also say your client paid a premium price. He would have selected a different, cheaper program. But you don't say anything about that. Are there other programs he was accepted to that he would have gone to? Do you have a specific program we can compare the cost of that program to the cost he paid for this program?
Yeah, he did look at two other schools. One of them was
Did he apply and get into?
I don't have that answer off the top of my head. We can plead that. We can plead that. We know. We can get our client to tell us what schools. One of them I know was.
I don't know whether he got into a different program.
I'm standing here today. I do not know, but I know he looked
so
at us.
You might or might not be able to plead that, okay? And you might or might not be able to plead that that other program was cheaper, but you, in the complaint and to your knowledge, don't have that information now.
I don't have that knowledge, but if I may, Your Honor, I think that's. It doesn't matter what other schools he would have went to or not. The idea is that he didn't get the benefit that he bargained for. And if I can make a quick analogy, the Campbell Soup case comes up a lot in these consumer fraud class actions. This is really what it is, right?
But the premium price theory doesn't work for that one.
Yeah, it doesn't.
The rankings inflation is a different one. But you're admitting there is nothing in your complaint that supports a premium price theory.
Yeah, and we don't plan to move forward with the premium price theory damage.
Premium price theory.
Yes. The benefit of the bargain is the damage model we seek to move forward, and that was greenlit in what they're working for in FAL.
Fine. It just simplifies the case. Finally, I want to ask you about the future yield of the degrees. Where did Rutgers make a representation about the future yield of his degree, and how has it changed negatively?
What do you mean by future yield in terms of?
I thought your brief referred to what the future yield of your degree would be.
Well,
you don't have nothing independent. Your case is really standing or falling on the rankings.
It's really standing on. He didn't get the benefit that he bargained for. And I go back to the Campbell's kid.
Is the benefit? It's not employment. It's a rankings and then the value of those rankings going forward.
Yeah, but we don't. Yes,
but do those rankings? Some of those rankings include. Employment, employability, and some of the key fraud here is that they inflated the employability part. So when we want to talk future yield, don't the rankings kind of begin to account for that by accounting for likelihood of employment?
Well, I mean, part of the rankings look at the employment statistics of 20 to 30%, depending on the year.
Through rankings is not an independent theory of liability, is what I'm saying.
Yeah,
the rankings. Misled your client about the future value. It's not an independent of rankings theory. So if the rankings are inflated, if they fell, then you can infer that. But you're not pleading anything independent of the rankings on that.
Yeah, it's not independent. But I don't think they even need to fall in the future. The discovery will show us that at that time, and we'll have an expert that would say, you know, if accurate data was submitted, this is what the rankings would have been. And then that delta.
Okay, this is all. The only theory is you're, having conceded the other stuff, the only theory is you have all go via rankings. Inflation and overstatement.
That's yes, sort of yes.
Let's talk about Perot. You lean on that a lot.
Yes.
Now, what I want to understand is that was a criminal case about deprivation of money from wire fraud. I get ranking fraud could deprive money, but you can be liable criminally for acting with a certain mental state, and it doesn't require a certain injury necessarily to flow from it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Standing doctrine, isn't that different? Because standing, you have to talk about injury in fact and causation and redressability and all of those things. So it doesn't follow that if Perot can be prosecuted that necessarily that they're standing, right? Even without a victim, the government can prosecute. Of course.
Of course. The idea from the Temple case is that the defense point of, well, he got a degree, right? He still got a degree. He paid for his tuition. He got a degree and he got a job. That's not a defense point. You can't. They can't push the case aside with that. The idea is that he didn't get what he bargained for. They marketed, they misled consumers to believe it was a top-flight school based on their rankings that were, we allege, are fraudulent, as well as he didn't get the benefit that he bargained for.
Right. And but Perot also had one other wrinkle, which is the rankings went up with the fraud and then plummeted.
From 1 to 41.
And they had specific students who had picked the school because of the ranking, right?
Yes.
Here, you haven't alleged it. Now, you've just told us now that it was 2024. Before, I think, the rankings dropped.
Yeah.
Before all this. So on the current state of the pleadings, there's a deficiency. Now, you should have a chance to amend that, you're saying, because you can come back and plead some specific facts. But on the current state of the pleadings, this case is distinguishable from Perot.
Yeah, well, I think, again, we go back to, it is different in that the rankings in Perot and even in Columbia drop, and in FAVL as well. But the difference there was that the schools admitted they were wrong, and either the U.S. News sanctioned them immediately and pulled them from the ranking system, or the school itself said, hey, we did something wrong, we're going to withdraw ourselves. So naturally, the rankings dropped. But the analogy here is in the consumer class action, in the Campbell soup case, we don't have to wait for Campbell's to say, yes, the soup doesn't have 25% less sodium, we're going to lower the price. We don't have to wait for the the seller to change the price or adjust the rankings in order to have standing.
And it is true. You could also plead the it's inflated, the bubble's going to pop, and the moment that people learn about the fraud, it's going to deflate to whatever its natural level is. If you plead it that way, and then you got to prove it that way.
Yeah, I mean, but ultimately in FAVL, what they're doing is they're not saying that in the future it's going to drop. The discovery is looking at in the expert, which just survived the Daubert motion recently, is that. And there was just a class certification the other day. It was sealed, so we can't see the underlying information. But the idea is that what the rankings would have been for that year in question, what if accurate data was submitted to U.S. News, what the actual adjusted ranking would have been. And then the difference of that, they go out, and then there's also an expert that goes out and goes to malls and talks to people and sees, you know, what's the value of that difference, right? Whether it's 2, 10, whatever. And then that is the damage model for us. They didn't get the benefit that they bargained. And your question is that concrete enough for standing? There's a host of cases in the District of New Jersey that say that is concrete enough. Benefit of the bargain is a concrete enough injury. There's the Volvo case, BMW, Mercedes-Benz, and Marcus v. BMW tells us, the Third Circuit, that, yeah, I see my time is up. So is there any other question?
You say that you're not espousing a premium price theory. So that means that you're not saying that the tuition was inflated by the alleged rankings.
Yeah, that's not the damage model we seek in the Harnish.
You're not saying that he would have attended other schools for less money because we don't know that.
We don't know that at the moment. The idea is that he didn't get the benefit that he bargained for, which is a cognizable damage model that's been recognized by the Third Circuit.
You've got an amended complaint here, right, after...
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
One amended complaint?
Yes, we've amended the complaint twice.
And so you're not saying that enrollment changed based on the alleged rankings inflation?
No, enrollment...
That school would get more money by virtue of more people enrolling.
Well, I mean, of course, the idea is that they're misleading the market. That's what the Consumer Fraud Act statute is, a protective statute. The idea is that they've misled the market in deceptive marketing. And ultimately, it drives more students to their school. Of course, you're going to want to go to a better school if you have the opportunity to. They're inducing and marketing that to students.
If the rankings didn't change in the year or 2 years or 3 years or 4 years afterwards, and you're saying you're not basing your complaint on some type of pricing or monetary injury, and he wasn't in the program to begin with, what do you have to stand on to say that you have standing?
Yeah, well,
it's a bad question. What do you have to bolster that you have standing?
Yeah, if I may, real quick, first thing is note is that when the statistics are submitted to U.S. News, that employment data is good for 3 years. So even if when new data is submitted, it's going to take time for that ranking. If you want to follow, the ranking needs to drop, even though I think it would be the incorrect merits determination. But it takes time for that to happen because of the three-year period.
In Parade, it went from 1 to 41 pretty quickly.
I'm sorry?
In Parade, it went from 1 to 41 very quickly.
There was, because U.S. News sanctioned him immediately, and he was also indicted. There was in those cases, in Temple, in Columbia, in FAVL, all of those sort of, there was a public outcry first. The schools jumped on top of it. Here, Rutgers has not done any of that. We had a whistleblower that was involved in an underlying case. That's where the fraud information comes from, and Rutgers didn't admit to the unlawful conduct we alleged yet, at least not yet. So, but we have standing. To get to your point, as we allege that the MBA program rankings impact the value of his program, Rutgers uses these statistics to market to students for all their prospective students, and they don't view them in a silo. And then I want to also note that 9 of the 10 courses in the MBA supply chain course overlap with the MBA program. I'll say that again, 9 of the 10 of our plaintiffs' courses overlap. And you have a question, Your Honor?
Okay.
That's it.
We'll get you back on.
All right, great. Thank you, Your Honor. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Jeffrey Seuss, and I represent Rutgers in this case. This is not the first time the plaintiff has had an opportunity to espouse whatever facts or theories it is he would like to put forth in support of his claims. There have been three pleadings already. The initial pleading that the plaintiff filed, we moved to dismiss. The plaintiff then amended as of right without even opposing our motion. At that point in time, we went through full briefing, and the district court ruled on the amended complaint.
Second amended complaint, but we should, Mr. Burke should grant leave liberally unless it's futile. And your friend on the other side has suggested some things. Would it be futile to amend the complaint to suggest the rankings were inflated and have dropped?
I would argue, yes, it would not only be futile, but it would be inequitable. That is what the district court, in ruling on the second amended complaint, found when it decided not to grant leave to amend. And as an initial matter on that, the request to amend to file yet what would be a fourth pleading was not something that was requested in the briefing or was briefed. The plaintiff in the briefing is standing on the second amended complaint from what we could tell, and there has not been any application to amend. And the standard of review is different, as your honors well know, between ruling on a motion to dismiss for standing, which is plenary review, versus ruling on an amended complaint or on not granting leave to amend, which is abuse of discretion. And there is no abuse of discretion here by the district court in denying leave to amend after ruling on the second amended complaint, which was the plaintiff's third pleading.
So, you know, getting to the nuts and bolts of Article III standing, as I understand Article III, it applies to federal courts. Federal courts when they hear civil actions, federal courts when they hear admiralty actions, federal courts when they hear criminal cases. It's all cases and controversies.
Correct.
And so if they're standing in Perot, there has to be because it's a criminal case. No one threw that out for lack of standing. Why wouldn't there be standing in this case? If they're standing to bring criminal charges, and that obviously is going to meet whatever test for standing there is, doesn't this case clear standing as well?
It does not, because there is not this traceability of the alleged injury to the plaintiff. In Perot, you actually had not just a change in the rankings, but you had student testimony about reliance on the rankings and the impact on them of the drop in the rankings. You don't have any of that here. What you have is a subjective belief by the plaintiff that because he believes that there was some fraud, and let's look at what the fraud is. It is limited to one time period, 2018, six students who he claims were misreported in the U.S. News and World Report's data for only the full-time MBA program, not the program that the plaintiff actually attends. So the plaintiff has not suffered a concrete harm that is particularized or personal to him because he was not in that program. And as the court has already observed in questioning my adversary, the rankings have not changed. And plaintiff's complaint, second amended complaint, actually reinforces that. When you look at the exhibits that the plaintiff attaches to his complaint, and your honors have that in the appendix, you will see that it starts with 2017 and goes all the way up through the 2022-23 time frame. He attaches both the part-time MBA and the full-time MBA. Doesn't attach the part-time Masters of Science in Supply Chain Management that he was actually enrolled in, or the MBA certificate program. But when you look at those rankings, they were the same before the alleged fraud occurred in 2018, because Exhibit A to the complaint, and I believe it's Exhibit G, which starts with the full-time rankings, start in 2017, and then it carries it forward year after year, and you can see the rankings stay the same. So even with 2018, 2019, when the plaintiff actually arose, right on through.
So this seems to your theory of lack of causation seems to require like an immediate response to alleged fraud. There's
not
alleged fraud, and then there's a meet, or very close. But I mean, we know from the securities fraud context that sometimes, you know, the security plaintiffs lawyers come and they're always trying to argue. They want usually the biggest window they can. They want to say the fraud happened here and it continued for this long, and the stock stayed high, and they want that huge window because that gives them as many possible plaintiffs and as much possible monetary recovery. And so if we look at that, and that's a very common area of fraud, we know that sometimes there can be a huge delay between when fraud happens and when you see a change in market-based valuation, which is, I think, equivalent or at least similar to the rankings here. So I mean, the plaintiff lawyers in the securities context are telling us that, yeah, the stock stayed high for as long as possible. Our fraud case is stronger. And now here the answer is if the rankings stay high for as long as possible, the fraud case is weaker. Can you walk me through that a little bit of a incongruity?
Well, what I would say is you have the alleged fraud occurring in 2018. We're here in 2025. There still hasn't been any. Certainly, it hasn't been pled. And again, we have to look at what has been actually pled.
So when you talk about, you know, it hasn't been pled, you know, down in the weeds of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, as in like Rule 15D, they make a difference between amending and supplementing. And amending is when you want to go back in time and say, hey, as of the date of my pleading, this is the state of the world. And then supplementing is, hey, something after the date of my pleading just now occurred. And so the liberalness and the standards for amending are there, but if someone comes with a supplement request and says, I've got new information, shouldn't we give that a slightly different look, especially when it's so core to the claims?
If that were something that had been requested, but it hasn't, and so we're left with the situation where I'm hearing about allegations that could be pled, but yet these are not new. The world hasn't changed, at least in terms of what the theory is on the rankings, since 2022 when the complaint was filed. The plaintiff has had opportunities along the way to make whatever changes needed to be made. This is not new information, I guess is the point, which could not have been presented previously in an amended, an application to amend. And we're still left with the situation of there's been no application at this point in time to amend, and it is an abuse of discretion standard. And I would submit that the district court did not abuse its discretion in saying after three opportunities, enough is enough. It isn't equitable to continue to perpetuate this case after 3 years if you haven't been able after three times, including one opinion by a previous district court judge who basically presented a roadmap of how to go about fixing the deficiencies in standing, in addition to the arguments that we had been raising since the very outset. The plaintiff had not only the benefit of our brief on the first motion, but on the second motion, which was fully briefed, they had the benefit of our response to their opposition. Then they had the benefit of the district court's opinion setting that roadmap, but they didn't follow the roadmap. And now they come in and they say they have this other information they'd like to plead, but this is not information that is new. This is information that has been there all along. So there cannot be an abuse of discretion, I would submit, at this point in time, which would allow what would be a fourth bite at the apple on this particular issue.
I mean, your point has a certain resonance in the sense that you moved to dismiss, you put your best arguments out there. They got a chance to,
and they haven't changed.
And they got a chance to fix everything based on your best arguments.
Correct.
And then best arguments prevailed in district court.
Once first.
Yeah.
They got a chance to see how they prevailed with a roadmap, and then they amend again, and once again, and again, it's two different district judges have looked at this carefully and considered it and have found that there just isn't, there's this disconnect between the fact that you have a plaintiff in one program, a part-time specialty Masters of Science program, pointing to allegedly fraudulent data in a completely different program in only 1 year, and you have the rankings which have stayed the same throughout. And so
we're told, and I think there's no reason not to credit, appear to have changed since the most recent ruling.
Well, again, now we are, 6 years out from when the alleged fraud is?
The ranking, let me go back before that. What is the difference between an MBA degree and an MBA certificate of attendance or online?
Well, the MBA degree, full-time MBA degree, is a degree that you are attending on a full-time basis in person. The MBA certificate is online. It is not an actual degree. You don't get a diploma.
This is a fully online program?
I don't know for sure if it is fully online, but...
How segmented are these markets? Are people, considering one or the other, or are they completely different pools of consumers?
I would submit that they are clearly segmented, because why else would you need separate rankings for all of these various programs? I don't know about the certificate. There is certainly a separate ranking for the Masters of Science part-time specialty.
Supply chain manager. Yeah, full versus part-time MBA, not a separate ranking. There is.
Part-time MBA versus full-time MBA, yes, there are. That's not only separate.
What was allegedly inflated here? Full and part-time?
Full-time. Just the full. The only data he points to is the full-time MBA program in 2018, six students who they claim the employment outcome data was misreported. And that's only one aspect of what the organizations collect, one metric.
There's a separate part-time ranking. Yes, okay.
There is. There is separate part-time, even the specialty master's programs. And you can see that in our briefing, and one of the things that the plaintiffs point to in their complaint is the website for the CSEA, which is the standards organization, which sets the standards for how you collect and report data. And they have separate standards for each of these different programs. So the market clearly is segmented enough such that not only does the standards organization deem it necessary to provide separate guidelines for the different programs, but then the various publications which report the rankings find it necessary to separately rank them, because they know the consumer, the student, is discerning enough to want to see, for my particular interest, what I'm going for, where do things stack up? And that's where you have this disconnect between, he was not in the full-time MBA program, yet that is the only alleged wrongful conduct he points to, and there is no allegation, nor has there ever been, that there has been any wrongful conduct in connection with either the part-time MBA program, which is separate, the Masters of Science in Supply Chain Management program that the plaintiff actually attended, or the MBA certificate program. So we are limited to just one area that has nothing to do with what the plaintiff actually attended.
You know, your colleague on the other side, your friend on the other side, said he would get expert witnesses if he had the opportunity at Discovery to show what the ranking should have been. Six students might not have moved the rankings all that much, but if he had an expert that showed that the rankings dropped even by 1 point, wouldn't that be enough to show an injury in fact?
Well, you have to first be able to make well-pleaded allegations to establish that before you get to Discovery.
100%. But let's just say that he said, oh, and by the way, I'm attaching, you know, my expert report who ran numbers, hypothetical numbers. We didn't get Discovery, so we can't run the real numbers. But he says, you know what, six students, they dropped one. Yeah, they dropped one. You could argue that maybe they would have dropped because another school just, you know, did better. Not that they, you know, there's a million arguments to kind of say why you dropped in the ranking. But if they said that, if you said, I got one expert and the expert said that would be good enough for injury in fact, right?
I disagree. I think you are still speculating about what would perhaps happen with respect to the Reagans.
Let's say the expert survived Daubert. He says there's an expert that survived Daubert, and so in order to survive Daubert, you can't be speculating. It has to be the product of reliable principles and methods. And so let's say he had one expert that said, yeah, the rankings dropped by 1 point. It survives Daubert. That would be enough for an injury in fact. It might be a very small injury in fact. The damages play might be tiny, but wouldn't that be enough for injury in fact?
I would say no, because you still have this disconnect between if he's going to be looking at just the full-time NBA rankings, we don't have any well-pleaded allegations that the plaintiff saw, relied on, utilized them in terms of his decision-making process to go into a part-time specialty master's program. And I would also say that you still have a plausibility issue, which is it really plausible to believe that the plaintiff who is not even attending a particular program would be utilizing a ranking that doesn't apply to the program he attends, or that the wrongful conduct involves a data point or a metric that doesn't apply to him because he's not seeking employment from a full-time MBA program. He's in a part-time specialty master's program. And I see my time is up, so if there are any other questions.
When did Mr. Bourdais attend or get the certificate?
What year? He enrolled in the school in 2019. I believe the certificate was awarded in 2021. It is in the complaint.
Okay. And what was the ranking in 2019 in U.S. News?
For which program?
MBA program.
The full-time MBA program, and again, the rankings are sliced and diced in a whole bunch of different ways.
The best analogy would be part-time, so what was the MBA, what was the ranking for the part-time MBA program?
The part-time MBA program in 2020.
And 2019 when he came.
2019, and in which organization, which ranking?
I said U.S. News and World.
Okay, I do not believe the complaint pleads that particular information. So it's not of record.
What is of record in 2019?
What is of record in 2019 are the exhibits that you have to the complaint, and what it says is Rutgers was the number one MBA program in the tri-state area. And that's in exhibits A through G.
And that ranking, did it stay the same in 2020?
It has stayed the same from 2017 all the way through 2022, which are the exhibits to the complaint A through G. That's the part-time MBA.
What is the most recent ranking?
What it is right now?
What is the most, yes. What is
I do not know. It's not something of record in this case.
Thank you. Said on a couple of facts.
Sure.
There are separate full-time and part-time rankings. Say USU, correct?
Yeah, that is correct. There's.
Are there international
rankings? I believe so. They slice and dice them.
And your allegations, all you can allege is that the full-time rankings were inflated by the inclusion of these six students, correct? You don't have a basis for alleging, let alone proving, that the part-time rankings were inflated.
We don't allege the part-time rankings were inflated. The part-time rankings don't take a look at the employment stats because it assumes that people are employed to go to the part-time.
I'll give you a chance to amend on that. Your case rises or falls on the full-time rankings. So the thrust of your friend's questions on the other side was that this isn't full-time and this isn't part-time. This is a certificate. But if we're going to allow you to analogize to anything, why analogize from the rankings and say that the full-time inflated rankings hurt your client when, if anything, this product, the part-time rankings, would seem like it's closer to the certificate program than the full-time MBA? Your client wasn't anywhere near a full-time MBA program.
Yeah, and I think Rutgers wants us to take these things and view them in a silo, but that is not how we pled it, one, and that is not how the real world works, right? Rutgers themselves, one, we pled that the MBA program influences the ranking of all of the programs.
You could plead the full-time MBA.
We do, yes, we do plead that.
Influences how consumers buy the part-time and the certificate.
Yes, we do, and that's 207.
The part-time rankings are accurate. The full-time,
yes,
has a spillover effect
Yeah, so that's the preeminent, it's a graduate school business MBA program.
You can't plead that at all clearly, but you could plead that if given a chance?
Yes, we could replead. It's actually in the Second Amendment complaint 207.
Okay. And what would you, if given a chance, would you add any detail or anything further on that?
I'm sure there's always more we can add if given the opportunity, but I think some of the allegations already get us there. We also say in paragraph 7 that the tainted rankings before the plaintiff were to select a different program, which goes to causation. We allege in paragraph 47 that the class members are heavily influenced upon Rutgers rankings and statistics that they published online, and they would have considered other programs in making a decision. You know, so I think on the aggregate, we've pled that. They make great defense points about was the ranking, was it actual fraud and all of that, but that has, we have to get past the pleading stage and into discovery. As Judge Phipps mentioned, that's what's happening in FAVL right now on that. Right? I think
when you say conclusive really influences the value, like consumers make decisions about part-time and certificate programs based on the full, in part, at least, on the full-time MBA ranking.
Yes.
And you expect that during discovery, you could develop expert and other evidence to support that allegation.
Yes, absolutely. And the Campbell's case, I go back to that. One of the sort of sub-elements of the reliance standard is that the court can also look at the reasonableness of whether that influenced folks. And that's for discovery to flesh that out, right? Ultimately, this is Rutgers, the graduate school. It's marketing. It's disseminating this information. It's the premier sort of fact, right, that they're riding on as a business school, the preeminent one in the state, and that induces folks to go to their school.
Annoyed, you had two district judges give you two amendments. They made clear, and yet your complaint is still maddeningly vague. I had to ask you a whole bunch of questions to figure out what was the benefit of the bargain that you lost here, what was wrong with it, and you just kind of wave your hands around, so to speak. Like, I have to pin you down about it's these rankings for this, etc. Can you spell out more specifically if given a chance to amend? Can you say, you know, students make decisions based on this. They pay more for this. They turn down other programs.
Of course, we can absolutely do that. I think we have some of those allegations there.
We were given two times before, so it's not of course. Well, your friend is understandably a little annoyed that you haven't done it.
I think as some of the ones I've just read, I think they're in there. You have to look, when you aggregate them all together, it gets us there. But also, we want to warn you, you know, when you're making merits determinations about whether the fraud happened and all, like, that's the next stage of this. I think we've pled an ascertainable loss with the benefit of the bargain. And ultimately, I want to remind the court, one of my last points in my rebuttal here is that under Clemens' concurring opinion, which has also been adopted by the Fifth Circuit, both district courts did not look at our contract claim and our unjust enrichment claim, which by are self-evident confer standing because of the nature of the common law private right of action. And the district court did not look at that at all. So we think that also confers standing for our case.
Any
questions? Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Thank
you. We kindly ask the court
for their helpful briefing and argument. We'll take the matter in advisement. I ask that the parties have a transcript prepared promptly and split the cost. We will go off the record, but before we do that, my custom is I'd like us to greet counsel at sidebar and shake your hands to thank you for coming to argue before us.
Thank you, Your Honor.